The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I think the story we got about World War II is all wrong.
Actually. I think that's right.
And then I read about FDR, and FDR's right-hand man was a Soviet spy.
Certainly was.
Right? And therefore...
Confirmed.
We should have been... One can make the argument we should have sided with Hitler and fought Stalin. Patton said that, so... And maybe there wouldn't have been a Holocaust, right? You know...
To be able to play the what-if game. You know, what if we sided with Hitler? Maybe it would have turned out better for the Jews. What if, we've heard recently, what if Tucker had a podcast back in the 1930s and he just sat down with Hitler, maybe Stalin, FDR, Churchill, Chamberlain? Maybe we could have avoided the nightmare that was World War II. There's a lot of what-if games that go on today, and don't get me wrong, there's plenty of conspiracy theories that we've been fed. But to hear some of these historical revisionist, I don't even know who this guy is, but he's on with Tucker Carlson. And Tucker's just there nodding along. Yeah, that's right. We've been lied to. And World War II could have been avoided. We could have talked our way or had dialogue and talked our way out of that nightmare. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live stream of this program at our Rumble channel, rumble.com/Trumpet Daily. Lots to get to on today's show, including a segment from our United States and Britain in Prophecy documentary. Maybe two segments. We'll see how that the show unfolds. But you hear that exchange there and you think about, as I brought out this morning in the forum for the students, just looking at this world and seeing how dazed and how confused it is. And everyone's just trying to make sense. We could have avoided the disaster over here if we just would have done. There's plenty of people that think if the Palestinians just had their own state, there never would have been an October 7. Well, they had their state in Gaza, and October 7 happened. It's Isaiah 59 and verse 10. I'll read it. We grope for the wall like the blind, and we grope as if we had no eyes, and we stumble at noonday as in the night. We are in desolate places as dead men. This passage, like many others, shows just how utterly helpless mankind is at governing himself, at solving the problems of this world. I mean, no one's going to deny that the lead up to World War II was complicated. Churchill didn't exactly enjoy working with Russia, but Hitler was on the march, and Hitler attacked Russia. Hitler was the immediate threat to Western civilization. And those people that come along this many years later and they just want to revise the history and say, hey, if we just would have done, maybe Hitler wasn't so bad. And then there's quite a few of them now saying that Churchill was the problem. Churchill. Verse 1, just back up to the first part of Isaiah 59. Behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened that it cannot save. It's not like God couldn't rescue us or save us from the catastrophe that's ahead. It says in verse 2, but your iniquities have separated between you and your God, and your sins have hid his face from you that he will not hear. It was Herbert W. Armstrong. 99 years ago, God started opening his mind. And it was Mr. Armstrong who understood well that at the start of human civilization, going back to Genesis 3, mankind cut himself off from God's way of life, from the Holy Spirit, from the tree of life, because of rebellion and sin. And ever since that time, mankind's just been going it alone without God's intervention or direction. I mean, God certainly has intervened to carry out his purpose and plan. A third of the Bible, as I've been saying this week, is prophecy. God's work, he's doing his work through his church, which is just a little flock, as it was described in the New Testament days as well. Just a little church, a small group of people faithful to the truth, armed with the truth, like it says there in Ephesians 6. Lovers of truth, like it says in the definition of love in 1 Corinthians 13. It's God's people that are defending and fighting for the truth of God. And that's what this world needs. That's what every news show needs. That's what every podcast needs. But this is what everyone rejects, the truth of God. And you can see how far they get off into just crazy and weird ideas. What if this? What if that? What if this? We're on the brink of nuclear war, worldwide war, just like we had in World War II. And you have people that are convinced. Just sit down with Hamas, sit down with Putin, sit down with whoever, and we'll sort this out. I mean, it looks like all the effort. I mean, I've praised Trump this week for his big ideas, his bold moves, his nonstop action. And yet already you see the opportunity for a ceasefire in Ukraine. It appears to be unraveling. It's just so easy to talk, to get everyone together. And you have to give Donald Trump credit for getting all of these leaders together. But as I said on yesterday's show, I mean, it also exposed a lot of the weakness in Europe. And when it comes right down to it, you know, are these European nations, is the UK actually, are they actually going to put boots on the ground in Ukraine? And then now Russia is saying, look, if there's going to be any security discussions over Ukraine, if we do come to a ceasefire, we're going to be involved. And China should be involved as well. So there you go. Is man capable of solving these kinds of problems? And God's answer is no. No, it's Isaiah 59. We don't know the way to peace. And God, you know, all through his ministry, Herbert Armstrong talked about God allowing this to go on for 6,000 years to show us. Aversion therapy, he used to say. We're going to get right to the point where we've destroyed ourselves, or very nearly, and then realize, I think we need God. I don't think we know the way out. Benjamin Netanyahu is taking advantage of the whole world being focused on Ukraine and what Donald Trump's accomplishing as he moves now into Gaza City, carrying out the counteroffensive into Gaza, standing alone, rising lion courage, going against the whole will of the world, basically. This is Bibi Netanyahu earlier today, clip 6.
I want to talk to you about appeasement then and appeasement now. Before World War II, the Western countries tried to appease Hitler. He said, just give me a piece of Czechoslovakia and I'll make peace with you. And they cowed and they bowed and they yielded. And they gave Hitler a piece of Czechoslovakia. And you know what happened next? Hitler invaded Czechoslovakia and then started the worst war in the history of the world, World War II. Well, today the West is telling Israel, just give the Palestinians a piece of Israel and they'll make peace with you. No, they won't. For the last century, they've been offered a state of their own and they refused because their goal is not to create a state for themselves, it's to destroy the state of ours, the Jewish state. That's their national goal. So we're not going to commit national suicide. We will not bow to foreign critics who lack the courage to face their own enemies, yet lecture us on how to face ours. We will not reward terror. We will defeat it. And the Jewish people will live free, strong, eternal. in our land.
He's not playing what-if games. He's a realist. He's looking at what's happening on the ground. He's looking at the history of Hamas. He hated the fact that Israel withdrew from Gaza 20 years ago so much that he resigned from his position in government. And now, just like Gadi Taub has brought out at Tablet, you know, he's facing resistance and strife at home. Shin Bet and the IDF, the top-tier leadership in these institutions that are fighting against Bibi more than they're fighting against Hamas. And trying to blame October 7 on Bibi, it's his fault. And as Gadi Taub brings out, you know, there were those in the intel community. You know about the intel community here. I think Tulsi Gabbard just fired 40% of her department. She knows it's corrupt through and through. We're facing internal corruption here at home, here in the United States. They've got it in Israel. It's there in the UK. There's all these commentators now talking about civil war coming to the UK because it's so deeply divided. What is happening to our nations? And how do we survive this kind of sickness at home? I'll come to that in the second segment. We definitely need Bible prophecy as our guide. We need the sure word of prophecy to help us see where this is headed. And yet that's the very source, the Bible, that so many commentators reject. Gadi Taub, we've had him on this program. He says October 7 presented the Israeli left with a daunting challenge, how to prevent the Hamas massacre from sounding the death knell of their most cherished dream, the so-called two-state solution. See, what if we just gave them land? That'll make them happy. I mean, it made Hitler happy, didn't it? Maybe we should have just sided with Hitler. Maybe we should side with Hamas. You know what? A lot of people are. Unbelievably, a lot of people are siding with Hamas. Homegrown Hamas supporters, thanks to university education in the West, in the United States, in the UK. Having witnessed the vast majority of the Palestinian public cheer Hamas's savagery, the last thing Israelis wanted to hear were plans for future partition of their land. Never mind a peace agreement. It says, faced with this popular rejection of its central platform, the left first had to focus on preventing the right from consolidating its growing majority in order to avert total collapse. Well, and you see the left working to that end here in the States as well. I read to you yesterday that story about how they're losing all of these voter registration Democrats. And so they're desperate. They've lost a lot of power in America, in Israel. And those supporting MAGA, those supporting Bibi, think that if they can just stay in power, if Trump can just stay in power, everything's solved. And we come into a golden age. I'll get into that in the second segment. The left launched a campaign to blame the man who had presciently warned that Israel's disengagement from Gaza in 2005 would give rise to a terrorist Hamas state. Bibi warned of this. Bibi said it was going to happen 20 years ago. And the left, as I say, the radical left in Israel, they're going after Bibi harder than they would Hamas. Hamas, they want to give territory to. They want to appease Hamas like they tried to appease Hitler as he was rolling through Czechoslovakia, Austria, Poland. What would have happened? What if Britain had stayed on the sidelines and just, you know, just let Europe sort this out? This is what J.D. Vance said to Laura Ingraham last night. Listen, whatever the security agreement is, you know, the U.S. is, we're definitely not going to put boots on the ground. We're definitely not going to be that involved. This is Europe's problem. Let Europe sort it out. And then for Europe's part, as I said yesterday, you've got all these weak leaders. So much weakness. I mean, they're just crying out for a strong man. I mentioned yesterday a little bit of what was going on behind closed doors in Europe. This was from last week, so it's just before the Alaska summit with Putin. This is clip number 4 with Carl Theodor zu Guttenberg. This is some comments that he made last week on MSNBC before the Alaska summit, and obviously before the big meeting at the White House this Monday with all the European leaders. Play clip 4.
Just moments ago, the president of the EU Commission posted on social media, and she wrote in part, "Today, Europe, the U.S., and NATO have strengthened the common ground for Ukraine. We will remain in close coordination. Nobody wants peace more than us, a just and lasting peace." Katie, I wonder, do allies trust President Trump?
We have our history with him. And on the other hand, there are a few players now in Europe that do have some access and to whom he obviously started to listen. Whether that leads to conclusions where we are all aligned remains to be seen on Friday. So as I've said before, trust needs to be regained, and trust has been shattered over the last few years. So
trust has been shattered. I mean, he sounds like a good politician there. A perfect angel, an angel of light. Yeah, we have had a history, though. And trust has been shattered. I mean, this really does reflect Europe's thinking about Trump. They weren't dropping everything and heading over to Washington, D.C. on Sunday so that they could be there for that meeting because they love Trump. And they absolutely love America. Like I said yesterday, they don't have that many options. They've got weak leadership, and the military over there is not strong enough yet. And everything comes down to a deal for so many of these leaders. If we can get cheap gas and oil from Russia, we'll buy it. And then we'll give you the soundbite on live TV saying that we hate Putin and we want to defend Ukraine's borders. And then there's also the element of just taking advantage of America at every opportunity that they can. There's Carl Theodor zu Guttenberg. Keep an eye on him. he has zero love for Donald Trump. And we could play other clips that show that. This is from that Gadi Taub tablet piece. It says here, the many forces opposing Netanyahu, including those in his own coalition, wanted to end the war even before the invasion of Rafah, which would have left Hamas in power in Gaza, Hezbollah perched ominously on our northern border with 150,000 rockets pointed at our civilian centers, and Iran with a clear path to a nuclear weapon and regional hegemony. Such an outcome would have put Israel's very existence in a danger it has not experienced since the spring of 1948. That's when the Israeli state was established. Against all odds. There's 5 or 6 nations aligned against it to try to destroy it when it was just in its cradle. When all looked bleak and the whole country was still in shock, Netanyahu vowed to change the regional order against all odds, says Taub. He managed to keep the war going, maneuvering patiently and skillfully toward his goal, which no one at the time imagined possible. No one thought it was possible, but the rising lion showed up. The rising lion showed up. And look at how he's changed the face of the Middle East. In just a few months' time. Rising lion courage. He's not dwelling, Bibi. Now, as I say, a lot of these dramatic changes in the Middle East, or at least as I've said before, it's still accelerating. The fulfillment of many Bible prophecies. But still, look what happens when you leave the world of what if and you look at it as it is. How do you deal with Hamas? How do you deal with Hitler? And after Hitler's demise, how do you deal with Russia or the Soviet Union? There were those back at that time that felt like as soon as Hitler's regime collapsed, America should have continued right on to Moscow. What if that would have happened? Maybe Tucker can discuss that later on. Instead of this, you know, well, if we'd have sided with Hitler, there wouldn't have been a Holocaust. How about that? Everything would have been perfect. Groping in the dark. Stumbling at noonday, just like blind people. Because we don't know the way to peace. There is a way, Herbert Armstrong used to say, raising his voice, by the way. There is a way to peace. But man doesn't know the way. We don't know the way. So there's endless discussions. And then, of course, there's a definite worldview that the Trump administration is projecting that, look, we're going to put all of our resources to America's problems because there's so many of them. There's so many. And Europe's going to have to try to figure this out. Listen to J.D. Vance in his interview with Laura Ingraham. This is clip number 3.
Why should America carry the lion's share of the burden from now until Lord knows when for Europe when Europe has the money to defend itself?
Well, I don't think we should carry the burden here. I think that we should be helpful if it's necessary to stop the war and to stop the killing. But I think that we should expect, and the president certainly expects, Europe to play the leading role here. But no matter what happens, no matter what form this takes, the Europeans are going to have to take the lion's share of the burden. It's their continent, it's their security, and the president's been very clear, they're going to have to step up here.
And so it sounds pretty good, and a lot of people in the MAGA movement fully support this. They don't want American involvement abroad, period. What if America had stayed on the sidelines after Pearl Harbor? I mean, they were on the sidelines before then. But what if they wouldn't have acted? What would have happened? What would America be like today? I mean, we could play the what-if game, I guess, all day long. But when you look at this world, it just confirms everything that Herbert Armstrong said and predicted so many years ago. This is not God's world. And the prosperity and the strength and the power that we enjoyed for so long, America and Britain, is because of a promise God made to Abraham. And God's given us those blessings, that fabulous prosperity, all that He promised, not because of our obedience, not because of our righteousness, because of Abraham's righteousness. And now that He's fulfilled His word, His promise, His covenant, now you see the curses setting in, as I'll show you from so many of the headlines that we just see all around us. Even with a temporary resurgence happening here in the United States, when we come back, we'll get back into those segments from our United States and Britain in Prophecy documentary, this being the 80th anniversary of the U.S. and Britain in Prophecy in print. The very first booklet appeared in print in 1945. And of course, we in this church, we have it. We own it. And we distribute it. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us today. And when we come back, you'll get to, again, get another segment of the U.S. and Britain in Prophecy documentary. We'll be right back.
Daily News, Bible prophecy. See the connection on the Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need the Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need the Trumpet Daily. Only the Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to TrumpetDaily.com.
The Bible is a collection of books written by about 40 authors over 1,600 years. It has lasted for 3,500 years. About a third of it contains education, about a third of it contains history, and about a third of it contains prophecy, forecasts of the future. Prophecy is not something your average church talks about every week. Too mysterious, too hazy, too ominous. But prophecy is a huge part of the Bible, and you can compare it side by side with world events and prove the Bible true or false. But even most people who say they believe the Bible are uncomfortable with prophecy. They think prophecy is strange, prophecy is outdated, prophecy is unknowable, or prophecy has failed. History is full of false prophets, people who said they knew the future. Many of them even quoted the Bible, but they were wrong. Still, there's no getting around it. Prophecy is everywhere in the Bible. Ignoring it means ignoring a third of the Bible. Jesus Christ himself prophesied. From beginning to end, the Holy Bible claims to forecast the future. The Bible claims to come from the only one who knows human hearts, who understands fundamental causes and effects, who has power to intervene, who can predict the future, the Creator God. The Bible is either right about prophecy and right about God, or it is wrong about both. Human beings cannot tell the future. That is why the religions they invent stay away from the subject or get exposed as frauds. Even many Christian leaders have failed in their prophecies. So some Christians say that prophecy was just for ancient Israel, or it was already fulfilled in the mists of history, or it will be fulfilled in the mists of the distant future. Or it is more or less a metaphor. Most just ignore it. But all these explanations discredit Bible prophecy and discredit the Bible. In fact, prophecy is the main reason the Bible has been rejected. But is it possible that we simply haven't understood Bible prophecy? One prophecy in the book of Daniel gives an example of why Bible prophecy has been so puzzling. The author of the book of Daniel wrote descriptions of the future of Israel after all its tribes had already been conquered. There was no nation of Israel. At the end of his book, Daniel specifically asked what was the meaning of the things he had written. He was directly told that the meaning would be withheld, closed up, and sealed. Even Daniel did not understand what the book of Daniel meant. Prophecies in Daniel, in Ezekiel, in Jeremiah, in Isaiah, in many more books of the Bible, were closed and sealed. They were not written plainly and clearly, yet they were written and preserved. Almost all of these prophecies are for a people called Israel. That becomes intriguing when you realize most prophecy was never delivered to that nation back when it existed anciently. Most prophecy was written after Israel had already been destroyed. Many of these prophecies, like the one in Daniel, specifically say they are for a future time called the time of the end. So, who are they for, and when will they happen?
Some good questions there to consider. If you're interested in being a student, a disciple of Bible prophecy, so much of it, as you heard there, it's aimed at Israel. And it was after Israel was taken off into captivity. So many of the most famous prophetic passages of Scripture, you can't just shove it aside and say, well, it happened historically. And then there's others today that say, well, it's directed at the little state of Israel, which wasn't even established until 1948. I mean, that is significant, the establishment of Judah as an Israeli state in 1948, and we'll get into that perhaps at a later time. But just taking you back to Herbert Armstrong's ministry and the United States and Britain and prophecy, Mr. Armstrong wrote in 1956, "Are we any better than Belshazzar?" He's talking about the fall of Babylon, this great empire. You know, if you look at human history, empires have risen and then crashed hard. That's just been the history. Are we any better than ancient Babylon? Are we going the way of Babylon? Are we going the way of Rome to a fall? Mr. Armstrong wrote, "We are plunging head-on to the greatest fall that any nation has ever suffered, and we're not aware of it." We're not even aware of it. How could this be? We have so many commentators and leaders that are much smarter than any of us. They're smarter than me. But do they understand the truth about the sure word of Bible prophecy? It says here, "We are so smug and complacent. We are so well satisfied with ourselves. We fancy that we're good Christians. Yes, we attend church. We sit there and imagine that we're worshiping God while we hear some beautiful music and a 25-minute sermon. What an awakening is going to jolt this nation very soon if we don't heed God's last warning and come to our senses." I mean, you could dismiss that warning and say, well, it was back in the 1950s, and Mr. Armstrong has since died, and it never really happened, did it? Well, there's prophecies that are in the Bible that were written thousands of years ago that are just now being fulfilled. That doesn't mean God got it wrong, or that the prophets that wrote it down somehow got the wrong message, or it never was fulfilled. 6,000 years we've been cut off from God, cut off from the tree of life. And we've raised up all these these institutions, whether it's with the economy or education, religion. I gave you that clip the other day, Mr. Armstrong just talking about the Babylon of religious confusion that we see in this world. Now, here again, we're in the midst of a temporary resurgence in the United States, but it's not a resurgence in morality or repentance. There's some economic benefits that are trickling down now, and there's some security at the southern border. The streets of D.C. are safer. But even with all of this, look at some of the most recent headlines. Orrin McIntyre, who was on with Tucker, as it happens, the other day. "The American empire is racing towards collapse." Well, is that true? Is that just a what if, or is it true? And then about Great Britain, VDH. "Britain is a you-know-what hole. Britain is going down fast," in other words. Ann Coulter says, "Why do people want to destroy the UK? Mossab Hassan Youssef, in an interview with Doug Murray, "This warning for the West." Charlie Kirk, The UK has fallen. I saw it myself. There's others. I saw it on Bannon the other day. The UK is headed for civil war. Ben Shapiro, the decline of the UK. Liz Truss on the Rubin Report. If this isn't stopped, the UK's fall is irreversible. Who could have imagined this kind of content 150 years ago? The 700 Club. Is Britain about to explode into civil war? Ricky Gervais, the UK has just reached its boiling point. Tommy Robinson warns of a massive civil war about to happen in the UK. A lot of these headlines. The British Empire is definitely gone. And look at what's left. Then you see what's happening in Little Judah. Douglas Murray. We've played clips of him many times on this show in his book on democracies and death cults. He says, I believe that what Israel stared into that day, he's talking about October 7, is a reality we might all stare into again at some point, and that some of us have already glimpsed. Now, could that? This is not a trumpet article that I'm giving you. This is Douglas Murray. He says October 7 is going to happen again, and it's going to be bigger, and we're all going to be facing it. Could that be possible? My father in the November 2023 trumpet, right after October 7, he said, the violence that unfolded in Israel on October 7 portends an explosion of volatility and violence that will lead to these armies surrounding the holy city, Jerusalem. So, you know, his comment, the one we had in the trumpet, it's not that far removed from all these other headlines. So on the one hand, you have these headlines, people saying, look, we're killing ourselves. And yet you have those that are in the MAGA movement supporting Donald Trump, seeing some positive signs in this temporary resurgence, saying that this is the new golden age. Trump, obviously, his life was spared. God intervened to spare his life last year and brought him back. And, well, that's true. But why? Why? I mean, we don't have to get into what-if games. We've told you on this show. Listen to this theologian on a podcast recently. This is clip 7.
So I'm calling this era that we're all living in as the most exciting in modern history, because even though our institutions are in decline, even though the liberal international order continues to try to bully itself, it lags, as it were, into our lives. Even though we have like the bullies in Brussels, the WEF, the demons in Davos, as I like to call them, they're still around as well. Even though we're seeing our cities crumble, we're seeing a lot of confusion in our culture. I never, ever ignore that. And the book addresses that. Nevertheless, there is this extraordinary surge of renewal happening. Faith, family, national traditions.
Wow. I mean, he just goes right down the list. Look at what's happened to our cities. Look at these radical left-wing globalists in Europe or wherever, these institutions that are crumbling. Everything's falling apart. Our institutions are in decline. And yet, this is the most exciting time in modern history. We're seeing a renewal. We're seeing a revival. A revival of what? That's the message coming from the evangelical movements that have really thrown their support behind a MAGA movement, a president, a political party. And we're entering into a golden age. And, of course, President Trump's out front leading the way. You've got to give him credit for cracking down on crime and those kinds of things, securing America's border and trying to make peace. He's hard at work with this. But without the master key to understanding prophecy, we're just groping in the dark. We don't know. We don't know what's coming next. And even these theologians that are on podcasts, they don't know. They don't have the key. This is the 80-year anniversary of that book that I just held up for you. You can call our 800 number there that you see on the bottom of the screen and order your free copy today. It's been mailed to well over 6 million households worldwide. And this book has also, as I said in Fundamentals of Theology recently, it's also come under attack. I mean, from the beginning, Herbert Armstrong presented this to a minister back in 1929. And he responded back and said, you know, this is true. You've got something special here, but, you know, we can't use it. Why? If it's the truth, why wouldn't you use it? And then even within his own church, the Worldwide Church of God, they tried to attack it and slash and burn the text back in the 1970s. And then they did the same thing again. That was under Mr. Armstrong's watch. And then after he died in 1986, I mean, it was a free-for-all. Everybody just went into the U.S. and Britain in Prophecy, started to cut it into pieces, downsize it, and then eventually they discontinued it. Satan hates the truth. The truth exposes him. Listen to what Jesus said in Matthew 10. This is Matthew 10, verse 5. These 12, the 12 disciples who became apostles, Jesus sent forth and commanded them, saying, go not into the way of the Gentiles and into any city of the Samaritans. Enter you not. Verse 6 says, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Why would Jesus say the lost sheep? Jesus was a Jew. There were plenty of Jews in Judea at that time. There's a lot of people today that say that the Jews are Israel, that all Jews are Israelites and all Israelites are Jews, that when the Bible talks about Israel, it's talking solely about the Jews. And the truth of it is, and this is fundamental, this is very basic, Judah was just one tribe. One of 12 tribes of Israel. How about that? That's for a new viewer, that would be like a news flash. But it's right out of the Bible. Judah was just a tiny sliver of Israel anciently. So what does that mean? And where did these lost sheep of the house of Israel go? Now, the sheep of the house of Judah weren't lost. As I say, Jesus himself was a Jew. They retained their identity, even in captivity. They tried to hold on to the Sabbath and other things, and so they didn't lose their identity. The northern tribes of Israel did, however. They lost their identity. And Jesus told the disciples, now you go to those lost sheep of the house of Israel. Isn't it interesting that then you get into the history of the first century church, and after about a third of the book of Acts, I mean, the rest of it's mostly about the Apostle Paul and his ministry to the Gentiles in Corinth, in Asia, in Italy, all these places that we can identify on a map, no problem. Well, what about the apostles, the first century apostles? Why aren't they mentioned in the story more? Well, they went to the lost sheep, and the world lost sight of these lost sheep of Israel. The apostles knew where they were. Jesus obviously knew where they were. He told his disciples, go to the lost sheep, and they did. And so they disappear from the story in the middle of Acts. And then some 1,900 years later, I mean, for centuries, these tribes were lost. I mean, you could go back to the New York Times archives in the 1800s and see stories about, well, what about the Afghans in this remote location over here? Maybe they're the lost sheep, the lost tribes of Israel. Or maybe it was the Indians that were here in America before Columbus came over. Maybe they're the lost tribes. And the point of it is, at least people were asking questions. At least people were curious. You know, what happened to these sheep? Today, there's no curiosity. No one cares. Everyone just assumes that the Jews are the Israelites of old. And that's it. Well, the truth of it is, all the Jews are Israelites, but all Israelites are not Jews. And that brings you to one of the pivotal truths in this book right here. The United States and Britain in prophecy. Where are the other tribes? Where are the brother nations of Judah? Curious minds want to know. They should. Well, God made it known, as you saw in that segment of the U.S. and Britain in prophecy. You know, there have been books written. Daniel wrote his entire book, not really knowing what it meant. It wasn't to be known until the last days. Well, in the last days, God saw fit to start Herbert Armstrong's ministry with the restored truth, the revealed truth of Israel's identity in these last days. And Ephraim and Manasseh in particular. I'll give the game away. Ephraim is the British Empire, and Manasseh is the United States, the single greatest nation in man's history. And all this in fulfillment of Bible prophecy. Listen to this, though, from Mr. Armstrong. I played this previously, but this is him commenting on all the confusion that you see in the world today. People just groping in the dark. This is clip 8.
I might mention now that I have practically completed the writing of another book that will be called, I haven't decided on the title exactly yet, but Seven Truths That Decry This Religious Confusion in the World. You live in a world not only of science and of education, philosophy, technology, and all of that, but you live also in a world filled with religious confusion. We have in this world, for example, Confucianism, Buddhism, Hinduism, Shintoism, Taoism, Muslim religion, and the Christian religion. Now, the Christian religion is the largest, believe it or not, and in the Christian religion, there are 250 denominations and sects in the United States alone, beside many small groups and smaller sects. But more or less larger denominations, 250 in the United States alone. And they certainly don't all speak the same thing.
They certainly don't. So much confusion, so many different opinions, so much arguing and bickering. I've been meaning to play this clip from the interview that Tucker had with Ted Cruz a while back. I think this goes back to the month of June. But here are two religious individuals. One of them a Southern Baptist, the other an Episcopalian. And they're talking about Israel, and they're trying to figure it out. They're trying to make sense of it. They're arguing at certain times. Listen to this. I mean, this is exactly what Herbert Armstrong was talking about there. Clip 9.
Growing up in Sunday school, I was taught from the Bible, those who bless Israel will be blessed, and those who curse Israel will be cursed. And from my perspective, I want to be on the blessing side of things.
Of those who bless the government of Israel?
Those who bless Israel is what it says. It doesn't say the government of, it says the nation of Israel. So that's in the Bible. As a Christian, I believe that.
Where is that?
I can find it to you. I don't have the scripture off the tip of my... You pull out the phone and use the Google.
It's in Genesis. But so you're quoting a Bible phrase. You don't have context for it, and you don't know where in the Bible it is, but that's like your theology? I'm confused. What does that even mean?
Tucker.
I'm a Christian. I want to know what you're talking about.
Okay. Where does my support for Israel come from? Number one, because biblically we are commanded to support Israel. But number two.
Hold on. You're a senator, and now you're throwing out theology, and I am a Christian, and I am allowed to weigh in on this. We are commanded as Christians to support the government of Israel?
we are commanded to support Israel. And we're
what does
told,
that mean, Israel?
We're told those who bless Israel will be blessed.
But what? Hold on. Define Israel. This is important. Are you kidding? This is a majority Christian country.
Define Israel? Do you not know what Israel is? That would be the country you've asked like 49 questions about.
So that's what Genesis, that's what God is talking about.
The nation of Israel, yes.
And he's, so is that the current borders, the current leadership? He's talking about the political entity called Israel?
He's talking about the nation of Israel. Yeah, nations exist, and he's discussing a nation. A nation was the people of Israel.
Is the nation they're the descendants God's referring of Abraham. To in Genesis, is that the same as the country run by Benjamin Netanyahu right
yes.
now?
Yes, yes.
It is.
Just like, you know, America is the country run by Donald Trump. No, actually, the American people elected Donald Trump. The okay. same principle
this is
there.
This is silly. I'm talking about the political entity of modern Israel.
Yes, and that is
you
that is
believe
Israel.
That's what God was talking about yes. in Genesis.
I do.
I'm saying I think most people understand that line in Genesis to refer to the Jewish people, God's chosen people.
That's not what it says.
Okay, Israel, but you don't even know where in the Bible it is.
There you go. The last book that Herbert Armstrong wrote during his ministry, Mystery of the Ages, you know all about this one. 40-year anniversary of this, 80-year anniversary of U.S. and Britain in prophecy. And this one has a chapter, chapter number 5, The Mystery of Israel. I mean, this was central to Herbert Armstrong's ministry. His work, everything that he taught, the signature prophecies he proclaimed. Because he knew that in this world, this present evil world, even in the world of religion, you get that, what you just saw there. Confusion. They don't know who Israel is today. And so they're trying. You see there too in those two people why there's a divide in the MAGA movement. Some that believe that, look, Israel as the state that started in 1948, I mean, that's the Israel of the Bible, and God says there to be a light to the earth, and Genesis 12 says if you bless them, God will bless you. And then there's the other side, the Episcopalians and others who believe that, well, once, you know, Christ came, the old covenant broke, or God broke his promise to Abraham, and now everything's just kind of fulfilled in the church, whatever that means, because they're, like Mr. Armstrong said, there's hundreds and hundreds of denominations. Lots of confusion to go around. In this world, Israel is a great mystery. I mean, there is such a thing as spiritual Israel, God's nation, the church of God. And there's also physical Israel as well. Listen to what Mr. Armstrong said in the U.S. and Britain in prophecy. I don't think I have time to go through Genesis 12, that verse that they were arguing over right there. Maybe we can get to that tomorrow. But Mr. Armstrong said in U.S. and Britain, let us remember as we approach this fascinating story that the Bible is concerned with the material, the fleshly, the literal, racial, and national, as well as the spiritual. Let us not, here's some wise advice if you want to be a student of Bible prophecy, let us not spiritualize away national things, nor nationalize spiritual things. Let us understand the sacred word of God as it is. Just let the Bible interpret itself. Look into those promises God made to Abraham in Genesis 12 and expand it on in Genesis 17 and other passages and see the twofold nature of those promises, the promises of grace and the promises of race or national greatness and prosperity. And if you understand that, you look at a little bit of history, even recent, more modern history for America and Britain, last couple of centuries, it's obvious. It's obvious who we are, and it's obvious why we receive the many blessings, the prosperity, the power, and so on that we've enjoyed, and that are now being taken away, these many blessings. That makes it pretty obvious, too, who we are in Bible prophecy. That's all I have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.